Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Budget cuts, beer, and foods that are bad for you. That should just about do it for Wednesday, right? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Wake up to the day's top business headlines. Subscribe to the Marketplace Morning Report podcast. It's on iTunes and marketplace.org/podcasts.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. This is the Marketplace podcast for Wednesday, the 27th of February. And what I'm about to say may be the very definition of a day late and a dollar short. $85 billion short, more like. We learned this morning President Obama and congressional leaders have set a meeting to talk about the budget cuts that are supposed to start hitting on Friday. They are going to meet on Friday. So if you're laying odds, the likelihood of those cuts actually happening would seem to be fairly high. And that being the case, maybe it's time to start thinking about what might happen as a result. There are lots of stories to do on that score, so we'll pick just one, the one in which your tax refund gets, I'm going to break my own rule here, sequestered. Marketplace's Mark Garrison explains.
The average refund is nearly $3,000, which is serious money to people like Claire Goodwin and her husband Trevor McQueen of Fort Collins, Colorado.
We ended up filing a couple days after my husband was let go from his job. So for us to have that extra money, we will be able to, you know, not worry as much as we would in terms of being able to pay our mortgage as he looks for a new job.
A refund hitch would be troubling for families who count on the money to make ends meet or who want to spend it on home improvement or a major purchase. The IRS handed back more than $300 billion last year, so the economic ripples of a delay could be widespread, says Carrie Leahy of Decision Economics.
That will be significant and could certainly be another damper on growth in the first half of the year, which many people seem to be worried about at the moment.
Inside IRS offices, the worry is about the steady flow of filings. If staffers get their hours cut in the sequester, that paperwork will pile up into a formidable mountain. Colleen Kelly is president of the National Treasury Employees Union. It represents 78,000 IRS workers, including those that process your tax returns.
Timely processing of those refunds is dependent upon the IRS having the staffing to do that.
It's not just refunds. Help desk staff and enforcers who sniff out tax cheats would also be cut. The good news is employees must get 30 days' notice before being furloughed. That hasn't happened yet. The bad news is a furlough could hit in April, just as returns pour in before the deadline.
It's like the busiest time of the year, actually, from the middle of April to the middle of May is really when so much of the work of the IRS processing for the filing season is done.
A sequester crunch wouldn't be the first delay this tax season. Because of the last-minute fiscal cliff deal, the IRS scrambled to reprogram systems held up processing. It's still not ready to accept certain tax forms and won't be until sometime next month. All this appears to be slowing down refunds. Treasury Department numbers show they're billions less than this time last year. The prospect of further delay is infuriating taxpayers.
I mean, that's money we've paid in and money that is ours rightfully, and I think we should be able to get that in a timely fashion.
Dr. Melanie Ellis expects a refund when she and her husband Stephen file. She owns her vet practice in Walnut Creek, California. Business is still down since the recession. She's planning to use their personal tax refund to shore it up.
We're going to need the money to pay bills and, you know, help make payroll and keep us in cat food.
Whether it's Meow Mix, home repairs, or emergency cash, a sequester-delayed refund would alter the plans of a lot of Americans. But not Claire and Trevor in Colorado. They filed very early and got their money this week. Those who don't do taxes soon may not be so lucky. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, oh, look at that, down 14,000 again. Go figure. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Just because getting into college isn't hard enough, there is this news from the College Board today. It's going to overhaul the SAT. First time they've rejiggered the college exam since 2005. Marketplace's Sabri Benishaw reports that, yes, it's about making a better test, sure, but it's also about getting high marks in the testing business.
I don't need to tell you how big a deal the SAT is. I'll let the cast of Glee do that.
Britney Spears has received a near perfect 2340 on her exam.
What? How?
Clearly she cheated.
No, I did not cheat, I swear. All I did was I filled in A for a while and then C for a little bit.
Situations like that aren't why the College Board is revamping the test. It says it wants to make it more valuable by linking it to a core set of knowledge. One other reason, maybe? Market share. Scott Jasek is editor of InsideHigherEd.com.
There's a lot of speculation that the reason the SAT is going to be changed right now has to do with the fact that the ACT last year overtook the SAT by a very slim margin.
The ACT is the other big admissions test, and the number of students who take it grew 50% in the past decade. But both tests are under pressure, and not just from people who didn't do well on them.
We're test optional, so are 38% of all four-year degree-granting institutions in the United States.
Joseph Suarez is a professor at Wake Forest University, which doesn't require the ACT or the SAT.
It conveys no additional useful information over and above what the high school transcript tells us.
But many schools still value the test, and more than a million students take it each year.
Most colleges that go test optional, two-thirds of applicants continue to submit scores.
Students will still do whatever they can to prove themselves. I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
The setup to this next story borders on the metaphysical, seeing as it revolves around the charge made in lawsuits this week that Anheuser-Busch InBev, the beer company, waters down some of its brews. Now, how it's possible to further water down something called Bud Light Platinum escapes me. But as a result, the plaintiffs say labels on bottles and cans of Bud are misleading. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Eve Troh reports.
It's not complicated to measure the alcohol in beer. Peter Reed, the publisher of Modern Brewery Age, says all you need is this ancient glass tool called a hydrometer.
You know, this is a very old piece of technology. It dates back to the Greeks.
He says mega brewers, like InBev, now also use computers to check alcohol levels. It's doubtful they ever get it wrong. But that's the basis of the lawsuits, that the 5% alcohol by volume label on Budweiser and other beers is false, that the beer's been watered down. Reed says lawsuits over alcohol levels are common, just usually in the opposite direction.
For being too strong, you have products like Four Loko or malt liquors.
Beverage industry consultant Tom Perko says the lawsuit is about more than technicalities.
It's probably mostly about confidence and trust. Are we really getting what we pay for?
He says U.S. customers are already kind of suspicious of the big brewers. InBev, based in Belgium, has a reputation for cutting costs and watering down other brands it's bought. But InBev wouldn't save that much money by watering down Budweiser in the way the lawsuits claim, says beverage analyst Thomas Malarkey at Morningstar.
Shareholders are only rewarded if customers keep buying the beer.
The risk to Budweiser's reputation would be much greater than the $5 million in damages sought by the lawsuits. I'm Eve Troh for Marketplace.
There's some new data out today from Brandeis University on the racial wealth gap in this country. It has tripled in the past 25 years. Whites getting richer, African Americans not really. The study is ongoing, the same set of families, black and white, 25 years worth of research into total wealth, not just paychecks. Tom Shapiro did the analysis, which points to housing as a huge factor, how where you live affects how much wealth you have. Tom, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Is a shortcut way to say this, that the homes that white people own increase in value more quickly than the homes that black people own because they're in better places?
Well, I think as homes are bought in communities a little lower down in the socioeconomic ladder, housing wealth does grow. But the point is it doesn't grow nearly as much or as fast.
One of the other things that this study points out is unemployment as a major factor. And we couldn't talk to anybody that you followed for this study, but we got an excerpt from somebody who illustrates the point of this whole study. And we had one of our producers read it. Here's what it sounds like.
I've had no work the last 2 years. It's been tough. When I was making $70,000 and $80,000 a year, I was slowly getting ahead. I could plan, you know. I could send my kids to school. I could survive. I've been doing it on $20,000 a year for the last 2 years. It's hard.
What happened to this family? He went from $70,000 and $80,000 a year to now $20,000 a year?
What happened with this family, he starts out, when we first interviewed him about 12 years ago, he's earning about $70,000 or $80,000 working in the telecommunications industry, and then goes into management in the construction industry. And the construction industry is hit really hard by the foreclosure crisis and the housing crisis. He loses his job. The family had been putting aside money for retirement. They cash that in. This is a college-educated couple who had, quote-unquote, had done everything right.
Well, on that topic, can you correlate achievement and this wealth gap? I mean, you know, your college-educated African-American family versus college-educated white family, and is there a disparity there?
For a typical white family, a dollar increase in average income over the 25 years returns about $5 in wealth. For that same typical African-American family, the same $1 average increase in income returns only 69 cents in wealth.
Get out of here. Hold on a minute. Really? That's crazy.
Really? That is crazy. Part of the equation there is that typical African-American family has less wealth to start out with than that typical white family.
Knowing what you know about the past 25 or so years of your study of this data, what does the next 25 years predict?
There is a story that talks about, and the data tell this, the wealth in the African American community has gone up tremendously over the past 25 years. We need to keep growing in a way that bring the African American or the communities of color line closer, that is, put it on the same trajectory of growth and prosperity as that of the white wealth growth line.
Not to end on a downer, but what happens if we don't change that curve, don't change the trend line?
If we don't start to bend that curve, I fear. I know what toxic inequality looks like. Shared economic prosperity needs to be spread much, much more broadly for the United States to compete globally as an economy.
Tom Shapiro. He's at Brandeis University, where he directs the Institute on Assets and Social Policy. Tom, thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
Coming up,
if you can fool people into a product that melts in their mouth, their brain is less apt to detect that there's a ton of calories in there.
The diabolical science behind our favorite foods. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial jumped 175 points today, about 1.25%, 14,075. It was on Housing News, by the way. The NASDAQ beefed up 32 points, just over 1%, cleared 3162 at the end of the day. The S&P 500 lofted 19 points higher, 1.25%, ended things at 1515. One of the big gainers today was Dollar Tree. Shares of the discount retailer sprouted higher 10.5% on better-than-expected earnings. Rivals Dollar General and Family Dollar rode the coattails, each picking up at least 2.4%. Turns out Priceline.com did not need the negotiator today. Shares rose more than 2.5% on news its profits beat expectations. Target missed the mark, though, falling 1.4% on a cautious sales outlook. Bonds fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 1.90%. And you are listening to Marketplace.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
From the Marketplace State Book, here's a look at events coming up Thursday. In Washington, the Commerce Department releases its second estimate, fourth quarter gross domestic product report. Wendy's reports quarterly earnings. It's Pope Benedict's last day in office, and it's a day to honor someone who works hard on the night shift. It's National Tooth Fairy Day, for those who still believe. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. So there you are, going over your credit card bill. $40 for gas, $100 on dinner, $50 on Smurf berries, 40... Wait, what? Yeah, no, it turns out that actually happened to about 23 million people. Apple has agreed to settle a class action lawsuit brought by angry parents who said their kids racked up big bills on iTunes purchases. In-app purchases, they're called, to buy extra weapons or to get a new level or to get a whole bunch of Smurf berries, I guess. The whole thing could cost Apple $100 million, as Marketplace's Stacey Vanek Smith reports.
A couple of years ago, Mike Bertrand's three young kids got very into an iPad game called Tapfish.
It's a little virtual aquarium, but if you want to buy different tanks, if you want to buy little castles, you have to use what appears to be play money.
It's not play money.
Over the course of about a week, my kids have tallied about $1,500 on the game.
In a proposed settlement, Apple will compensate 23 million angry parents who say Apple didn't have proper controls in place for apps. Many will receive a $5 iTunes gift card.
The question is whether this is a deceptive practice.
Colby Zintel is with advocacy group Common Sense Media. She says Apple has added barriers to prevent those app charges. But she says for these supposedly free games, there need to be standard protections.
In the case of a game like Smurfs, these kids aren't even reading. So the ability to press a button and you're charging your parents' credit cards, you have to question what the business practices are.
Those business practices grew out of the app marketplace, says Renee Ritchie of tech news site iMore. He says early app games charged as much as $10, but nobody wanted to pay it.
And this model emerged called freemium.
That's when the game itself is free, but things inside the game cost money.
So instead of having to earn something in a game, you can just buy it.
Ritchie says all of the top grossing games right now are free-ish. And they're going to stay free if Mike Bertrand has anything to say about it.
Well, my kids don't know my iTunes password anymore.
In New York, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
On the foreign exchange markets today, the Kenyan shilling rose to seven-month highs. And yes, you're right, that is not an update we would normally give, except foreign investors are beginning to notice the potential in East Africa's biggest economy. Google's chairman Eric Schmidt was there not too long ago. IBM just opened its first African research lab in Nairobi. And as Kenya's middle class grows, there is growing interest in mining that country's consumer data. From Nairobi, Julia Simon reports.
It's about 8 o'clock on a Thursday night, and this Nairobi supermarket called Uchumi is packed with evening shoppers. Engineer D. Karubo has come to buy face wipes, assorted toiletries, and what else was it?
I got a Kit Kat too.
At the cash register, she pulls out a bright red plastic card.
This is my Uchumi loyalty card. They just swiped it.
That you just heard is the sound of data going from Karibo's loyalty card to a huge computer room in the back of the store. Here I meet Uchumi's information manager, Charles Thugu.
So we got our cables.
So we got our cables over here going all the way to the tills. So as the cashiers are selling, we're able to get a hold of that information and have it saved to the server.
With 21 million customers a year, the Uchumi chain makes up roughly a quarter of Kenya's supermarket sector. But Thugu thinks they could be more competitive if they could just dig deeper into customers' information.
We're interested to know the basket size of a customer, their frequency. How often do they come into our stores to shop? What are the items they normally buy when they come to do the shopping? So that's the information that we're quite interested in.
And our data analyst, Karibu Nyaga.
What we want to do is really set the foundation for analytics infrastructure, if you will.
Nyaga runs K-Tree Partners, a Kenyan analytics firm he founded last year. He says data analytics can open up consumer information not just in retail, but in the financial sector as well. He says Kenya's banks especially could really use more data.
For example, every credit card company in the U.S. shares with a credit bureau who their account holders are. Everyone knows that you've had these set of accounts and how you've handled them. In Kenya, there's no such sharing. And so when you come into my bank to open an account, you may seem like a perfectly decent guy, but you might also be a really big fraudster.
Nyaga hopes that if Kenyan banks can have more data transparency and make a credit score system, then they can sort out the creditworthy from the crooks.
And it's quite exciting because the net result of that effort is more folks have access to credit, which is a huge enabling factor in growing the economy.
The problem is data analytics is expensive, and many Kenyan companies aren't ready to make the investment yet. Luckily for supermarket Uchumi, someone else might be willing to pay. Multinational Unilever is interested in paying Uchumi to have access to their customers' information. Because even if Kenya's companies don't see the value of the country's consumer data, the global marketplace does. In Nairobi, I'm Julia Simon for Marketplace.
Think about your favorite foods for a second, about how they taste, about how they make you feel. A lot of the foods we crave, and I use that word intentionally, by the way, are so good because of three main ingredients: salt, sugar, and fat. And when mixed in just the right amounts, they're an almost irresistible combination, and the food industry knows it. Salt, sugar, fat is also the title of Michael Moss's new book about how the food companies keep us coming back for more. Michael, it's good to have you with us.
Thank you so much.
All three of the main food sins get equal billing on the front cover of this book: salt, sugar, fat. Is one better or worse than the others?
You know, I know it sounds like my own personal diet when you look at that. I think for children especially, and I have two boys, 8 and 13, sugar is the most dramatic ingredient. It rushes quickly to the brain and compels those poor guys to eat. And it's a struggle when we go down the cereal aisle. For me, I'm more of a salt and fat guy. And salt, as an allure in processed food, it's tremendous.
There are many, many fascinating nuggets in this book. There's the idea of stomach share, which is what these companies want to get, of line extensions like vanilla, cherry, Dr. Pepper, and all that stuff. The one that struck me, and it's just, it's so, so brilliant, is this idea of vanishing caloric density.
Oh, that one in particular basically says, look, if you can fool people into a product that melts in their mouth, their brain is less apt to detect that there's a ton of calories in there. Melts in your mouth, disappears. The brain says, oh, great, let's eat more. That's one of the wonderful ones.
Talk to me for a second about chunky spaghetti sauce.
You know, I was really amazed at how many spaghetti sauces, pasta sauces, are very, very sugary. The goal that food formula scientists strive for, called the bliss point.
That's actually what they call it, the bliss point?
They do. The bliss point is the perfect amount of sugar, sweetness in the food that will send you and I over the moon and products flying off the shelf.
And it's so easy to think that the food companies are evil. And certainly a lot of this is underhanded. But as these food company representatives say in your book, we are only giving consumers what they want. And gosh, all this stuff tastes really good sometimes.
The food giants convincingly argue that they by no means intend to make America obese or otherwise ill, and that they count nutrition among their other goals of providing food that's convenient and low price. But I think the companies are actually incredibly sensitive to consumer reaction, shopping habits. If people stop buying their products because they perceive them as unhealthy, that is a huge problem for the industry. The problem is the back pressure from Wall Street. Every time the companies try to cut back a bit, Wall Street is there watching the sales, watching the profits, urging the companies to go back to salt, sugar, fat. And so they do.
Just at the point in this book where I was beginning to feel sorry for some of these food companies in the fact that, as we've talked about, you know, they're as hooked on salt, sugar, fat as we are, I got to the advertising portion. The whole thing where they start directing it at kids on Saturday mornings and you're in control and ask for the Lunchables and all of these things. And that, to me, is just positively devious.
Kids don't recognize that ads are ads. They see reality, which is why the food companies, like other consumer product producers, go after children, and also because children are at that time, especially teenagers at the time, where they're branding to brand loyalty.
And they put the kids in control.
Yeah, that's why that became the very powerful Lunchables slogan, which was, you know, all day you've got to do what they say, but lunchtime is all yours. Yes, this notion that we're putting you kids in control of your meals is hugely powerful. They're deciding which brand to choose, and they'll carry that for the rest of their lives.
Michael Moss is an investigative reporter for the New York Times. He's got a new book out. It's called Salt, Sugar, Fat: How the Food Giants Hooked Us. It's a good one, I'll tell you. Michael, thanks a bunch.
Kai, thanks for having me.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
This final note today, which we'll file under the heading Things That Kill Mere Mortals Only Make J.P. Morgan Chase Stronger. CEO Jamie Dimon was speaking at an investor conference yesterday. And forget the 17,000 layoffs the bank just announced or the London Whale $6 billion trading fiasco from a number of months ago. Turns out Jamie Dimon is just not a guy who worries.
But we have a battleship. We were a port in the storm in the last storm. We will be a port in the storm in the next storm. And I kind of, you know, I read this thing by the guy who talked about anti-fragile. I think our bank is kind of anti-fragile. We actually have benefited from downturns. That's how we like to run the company.
Takes guts, right? All right, we're done. That's Marketplace from APM. Today, the Dow jumped 175 points, 1.25%. The NASDAQ added 32 points, just over 1%. The S&P 500 up 19 points, 1.25%. Robbie Carman, Chris Clark, Stephen Colon, Bill Lance, Jeff Peters, Charlton Thorpe, and Brendan Willard engineer the broadcast for us. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Let's do it again tomorrow, huh? Oh, and this is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.